First off, I'd like to thank everyone for the opportunity to speak tonight. And I think every time I get up here, I'm going to start with just encouraging other men to go and sign up for the talks. There's a whole long list of spots open. There are talks that are real short, like 3 minutes. Some medium-sized ones there for the singing nights, and then full-up sermons. And it's just a great opportunity to grow. Studying to prepare these helps you grow. Giving them helps you grow. So I would encourage everyone to do that. Also, a little lesson learned. I would encourage everyone to talk to Stan before you do one of these. He said something this morning. I thought for half a second he was going to take my sermon topic, and I was going to have to write a whole sermon in like 3 hours. But luckily, he swerved on me, and I'm safe. I can go with what I started with. So I encourage that also. Something else I wanted to mention was a little bit of attribution. It kind of goes without saying that anytime you get up here and talk, that you got influences all over. And so sometimes someone's like, wow, you talked about this thing that I heard, you know, Dennis Scroggins say one time, or you talked about this thing I heard from someone else. I'm sure I'm going to reference lots of people, lots of things that people have said. But in this case, I got a major influence from a sermon I heard when I was on vacation in Florida. So I don't remember the guy's name. I don't remember the congregation he's from. So best I can do is some dude in Florida. But if I find out his name, I'll put it in. In the meantime, I'll attribute some dude in Florida. There we go. The thing that I want to talk to you all about tonight is lies. And I want to start off by defining it. And it may seem a little bit obvious, but it's a little trickier than you would think. So a lie is a noun, obviously, what we're talking about here. And it's assertion or something of something that is known or believed by the asserter to be untrue with the intent to deceive. And that's a seemingly really long definition, given the fact that we all know what a lie is. But there's a reason that it's that long. It's because something isn't merely a lie because it's false. Something isn't merely a lie because someone believes it's false. Something isn't merely isn't a lie just because of these different factors, but it's all this one thing. So I think it helps to give some examples. One example is the other day, Ian Tilley posted some on Facebook, and it's one of those prompts that you get, where it says, if you were kidnapped and the kidnappers let you keep posting on Facebook so everyone would think everything was okay, what would you post that the kidnappers would not think anything of, but all your friends would be like, oh no, what happened to Ian? And I forget exactly what he posted, but it was something like, you know, I sold my truck and my guns and bought a Prius because the truck wouldn't fit in the parking spot at the vegan restaurant, you know. And all of us would be like, oh my goodness, call the police right now. Now, if Ian really posted that, would that be a lie? Would that be a lie? Is he trying to convince anyone that he really sold his truck and guns and went and did those things? No. He's not trying to convince the kidnappers. They know he's tied up over there. He didn't do those things. And he's not trying to convince any of us. He's trying to convey a truth to us. The truth being, help me, I'm horribly in trouble. Please come and help me. Josh Scroggins posted something the other day. That's right, I'm looking at you. It was about cauliflower pizza dough or something, other low-carb pizza doughs. And I posted a thing on there. I saw Ian's post the other day, and I've already called the police to put an APB out for Josh. I don't know what's going on. Now, was that a lie? No, that wasn't a lie. I wasn't trying to convince any of y'all that I had really called the police and that they're out there looking for Josh right now. That wasn't a lie. And it's important because I want to focus today on lies, because lies are evil. Lies are insidious. There is no good lie. And so I want to focus on what a lie is. A question can't be a lie. A lie is an assertion. A question can't be a lie. Being silent isn't a lie. Somebody told me one time that Jesus lied when he was on trial because he didn't affirm a question that was asked of him. He held his tongue and kept quiet. That's not what lying is. Jesus didn't lie. Later we'll see that Jesus can't lie. But Jesus didn't lie. And there are other forms of deception. There are other forms of deception that are sinful that aren't lies. But what we're talking about tonight are lies. So first we want to talk about where they come from. What are the origins of lies? And Jesus told us that answer. He told us in John 8, verse 44, talking to the Pharisees and the scribes, you are of your father, the devil, and you want to do the desires of your father. He was a murderer from the beginning, and he does not stand in truth because there is no truth in him. Whenever he speaks a lie, he speaks from his own nature because he is the father of lies. I'm sorry, for he is a liar and the father of lies. Jesus says that's where it comes from. That's the origin of lies. That's the origin of deception, in fact. He's the one who deceives the world. Revelation 12 and verse 9. And I'm going to have some of the verses up here and not others, but I'm going to be going pretty fast because my dry run was 30 minutes and I'm trying to keep it there. It says, "And the great dragon was thrown down, the serpent of old, who was called the devil and Satan, who deceives the whole world. He was thrown down to the earth, and his angels were thrown down with him." And then in Revelation 20, still talking about that, it says, "And the devil who deceived them was thrown down into the lake of fire and brimstone and will be tormented day and night forever and ever." So we know that that's the end. That's the end of the father of lies, is to end up in that place. Okay, Satan's a liar. We see that Satan's a liar. He says that the Pharisees and scribes, when they lie, that's coming from Satan. But here are a couple of passages that speak more directly to it. You have Ananias there in Acts 5. So Ananias and Sapphira, they sold their land and they came and said, "Hey, we sold our land for this much money. Here's all the money." But they lied. They'd only given part of the money and they kept some back. And so what Peter asked him, they came separately. So when Ananias came, what Peter asked him was, "Ananias, why has Satan filled your heart to lie to the Holy Spirit? Why has Satan filled your heart to lie to the Holy Spirit?" Now, don't get the idea that we can't control it and Satan can just have his way with us. But Satan had an influence on Ananias. "Why has Satan filled your heart to lie to the Holy Spirit and keep back some of the price of the land? Why is it that you have conceived this deed in your heart? You have not lied to men, but you've lied to God." And this is something that can still happen to us. We can still be influenced. We talked on Wednesday night that we live in the physical, but we live in the spiritual. The devil's a spiritual being. He's engaged in a spiritual warfare that we need to be engaged in. And he can influence us. And we need to be wary of that. It's something that can happen to us. And you can see Paul in 2 Corinthians 11, verse 3, warning the Corinthians about this, having concern with the Corinthians about this. He said, "But I'm afraid that as the serpent deceived Eve by his craftiness, that your minds will be led astray from the simplicity and the purity of the devotion to Christ." He was worried that influence would be affecting them also, leading them down a path that was a lie, to a point that they would believe the lie and to a point that they would spread the lie. So that's where lies come from. We can see that we can be influenced to lie, but to whom can we lie? Well, one is God. We can lie to God. You might think to yourself, "Well, what's the point in that? He's God. He knows everything. Why am I lying to God?" And there is no point. There's absolutely no point in lying to God. But that doesn't mean we can't do it. It doesn't mean that people don't do it or that we won't do it. But he can't be fooled. He can't be deceived. But that doesn't matter, because a lie does not depend on the receiver of it. It depends on the teller of it. We can see this easily with our children. You walk in and you see the child, you see the two-year-old, and they're sitting there and they're covered head to toe in something, I don't know, paint or flour or whatever they've gotten into. And you look at them and you're like, "Did you get into mom's paint?" They're like, "Nope." Like they're going to fool anyone on planet Earth, right? But they lie right to you, even though the truth is evident, and there's no way that they're going to get away with a lie. Whereas an example of that is Sarah. You got Genesis 18, the Lord had come to visit Abraham and Sarah, and the Lord had told them that they were going to have Isaac, right? And so Sarah laughed to herself, saying, "After I've become old, shall I have pleasure, my Lord being old also?" They were like 90 and 100 at the time. And the Lord said to Abraham, "Why did Sarah laugh, saying, 'Shall I indeed bear a child when I am so old? Is there anything too difficult for the Lord? At the appointed time, when I return to you, at this time next year, and Sarah will have a son.'" So the Lord called it out, right? Why is she laughing? Why is she laughing? She hasn't lied at this point. She just laughed. She shouldn't have laughed. But he calls it out. You know, why is she laughing? Why does she not have the faith she should have? But then Sarah denied it. And Sarah said, I did not laugh because she was afraid. That's why the two-year-old lies, right? They know they did something wrong. They know bad things are about to happen. And if there's a one in a million chance that by saying, nope, this paint attacked me, I don't know how this happened, they're going to go for it. But the Lord said, no, but you did laugh. You're not going to fool God. You're not going to fool God, but you can lie to God. Who else can you lie to? Other people. That's obvious, right? That's the most common form of lying. That's the typical, right? That's the thing that we often talk about. And one of the things we often talk about is that there are no little lies. I don't know if that's exactly the best way to phrase it. It's not that there are no little lies. It's that all lies are lies. And all lies are bad. If you go and you lie about your fishing trip, and you talk about the big old fish you caught, and oh, you should have seen it, but you know, I threw it back because we weren't going to have time to cook it or whatever. It must have been 6-7 pounds. It doesn't really matter to anyone. I don't even know why you're telling the lie. It doesn't really matter to anyone, but it ends up mattering to you because you told a lie, and it affects your soul. Now, there are lies that matter to other people, and sometimes people classify those as medium lies. You know why I pulled you over? Sir, do you know how fast you were going? These are things that impact other people. Maybe we think that those are a bigger deal, and maybe they are. But then there are big lies that not only impact people, but they impact people in enormous ways. They impact souls or they impact lives and things like that. In 1 Kings 13, I don't know if you remember the story, but a prophet was sent to Jeroboam in 1 Kings 13. They told him all this bad stuff, and Jeroboam wasn't having it. And Jeroboam said, seize him. And as soon as he said it, his hand withered up, and he couldn't even pull it back to himself. It just dried up on him. And he asked the prophet to pray for him, that his hand would be healed, and his hand was healed. And he asked for the prophet to come and eat and to drink with him, and to come to his table. And the prophet said, no, because when I came, when I was sent by the Lord told me that I'm not going to eat anything in Israel, I'm not going to drink anything in Israel. When I go back to Judah, I'm going to go away different than I came. I will not eat with you. So he left. Well, this other prophet heard about this prophet that had gone before Jeroboam, and said, I'm going to go out and find that guy. He goes out and finds the guy and says, hey, come to my house. And he tells him, you can't do that. I'm not allowed to eat here. I'm not allowed to drink here. I'm not allowed to come to your house and partake as he had been offered. But this other prophet, he said to him, I am also a prophet like you, and an angel spoke to me by the word of the Lord, saying, bring him back with you to your house that he may eat bread and drink water. But he lied to him. It turned out that this was a big lie. Prophecy came saying how bad it was. And when this guy got back on the road, he was killed by a lion. And he was killed by a lion in a peculiar way, too. The lion just killed him. He didn't maul him. He didn't eat him. He didn't attack the donkey. He just killed him and left him there. I'm trying to remember, he may have actually just sat there next to him. I'm trying to remember if it was that story or another one. That was a big lie. And it didn't matter. The prophet could have just kept walking down the road with the guy and spent time with the guy without having to have him come back to his house, without offering him food and drink. Lastly, we can lie to ourselves. We can lie to ourselves when we don't want to believe something. We can lie to ourselves when we want to believe something that we know isn't true. It's It's a form of self-deception. A common one is we lie to ourselves to prepare ourselves to lie to someone else. In some cases, lying to ourselves and telling ourselves, this lie is okay. In other cases, lying to ourselves to get ourselves to believe it before we tell someone else. Because it's easier to tell a lie that you believe. That's a way in which lies are insidious. Lies begetting lies, we've heard about before. But lies, even just stewing within you, to then go out and affect others. But we can lie to ourselves. One example is King Saul. King Saul was told to go and destroy a nation, destroy everything, all the people, all the livestock, all the everything. And they went out and they destroyed all the people except the king. And they kept back some of the livestock and they didn't destroy them, but they were going to sacrifice them. But when Samuel comes up, Samuel, the prophet, the last of the judges, comes up, Saul says to him, "Blessed are you of the Lord, I have carried out the command of the Lord." He probably believed it by that point. But he has to have lied to himself at some point. Because how could you possibly have gotten to that point and thought, all means not all of these things? Deceived himself. Told himself a lie. Now, every time I bring up an example like this, someone will come up to me after the sermon and be like, "You can't know someone's heart." I admit it. It could have been he didn't believe it at all. Didn't lie to himself at all. Knew it was a big fat lie and was just lying to Samuel. I'll grant you that. So now you don't have to come up to me afterwards. But even if that's not the case here, it is the case in lives. We can lie to ourselves and lead ourselves down a path. The passage that I asked to be read at the beginning of worship today was over in Mark 14. And this was after the Lord's Supper. This was after they had sung hymns, they had gone out to the Mount of Olives, and he's telling them that the shepherd's going to be struck, the people are going to be scattered, and Peter says, "Not me." Now, this is another case where maybe it wasn't a lie, maybe he firmly believed it. Maybe it was just arrogance. But it's the type of thing that we can do to ourselves. Or we can convince ourselves that we're impervious to something. And of course, he tells them that you're going to deny three times. And Peter's insistent. He's like, even if I have, you're going to deny me three times. But he's insistent, even if I have to die with you, I'm not going to deny you. And we give Peter a lot of grief. Because Peter's insistent, and then Peter, of course, does deny him. But Peter's the last one. All of them denied him. All of them were scattered. That's what Jesus said was going to happen. You will all fall away. All of them did it. And if you notice at the end of what Ed read, all of them said they weren't going to. That's what the end of it says. And they were all saying the same thing also. They all said, "We're not going to deny you. Even if we have to die, we're not going to deny you." And they all did. They convinced themselves of something that wasn't true, and they should have known it wasn't true, because Jesus just said it, and Jesus didn't go around saying things that weren't true. But they convinced themselves of something that wasn't true. So that's who we can lie to. Now let's talk about why it's so bad. Why it's evil. One aspect of why it's evil is because it keeps people from knowing the truth. You can lie to yourself and keep yourself from knowing the truth, but when you lie to somebody, you're blocking the truth, you're muddying the truth, you're cluttering the situation. You're obfuscating the ability to even see the truth. Someone may believe your lie. Then they're not even seeking the truth. They think they have the truth, but they just have the lie that you told them. And a lie is a perversion or a manipulation or a rejection of the truth. And you can believe a lie. You can believe a lie someone tells you. You can believe a lie someone that you tell yourself. And it can lead you to a point where you're living in a place that isn't real. You're living based on things that are fantasy, and it can be hard to liberate you from that fantasy. This is a problem when you're teaching somebody about the Bible. It's easier to teach someone that doesn't know about the Bible and Jesus than it is to teach someone that has lived in knowledge of the truth of a lie. Sounds kind of oxymoronic, but that's what it is. They have a lie in their brain as truth. It's immutable truth. And it's hard to talk to them because they don't know what's real and because they're so steeped in it. But it's not like it's something that can't happen to us. In 2 Thessalonians, Paul, talking to the church at Thessalonica, he's talking about someone coming along who's in accord with the activity of Satan, with all the power and signs and false wonders, and with all the deception of wickedness. We talked about him deceiving the world, right? We've got someone coming along being deceptive in this manner. The deception of wickedness for those who perish. Not for those who are perishing, for those who perish. It is a trap. And it traps people, and those people perish. Because they didn't receive the love of the truth so as to be saved. For this reason, God will send upon them a deluding influence so that they will believe what is false, in order that they all may be judged who did not believe the truth but took pleasure in wickedness. Took pleasure in wickedness. That's kind of harsh sounding, given that a lot of the people that we're talking about here were following false prophets that said they were following Jesus. He's talking about people that thought they were following Jesus. But they took pleasure in wickedness. Well, what's the wickedness? The wickedness is that it's false. The wickedness is that it's not the true path. And if you love the truth, then you'll want the true path. But people can hurt one another with lies, obscuring the true path, making it harder for them to get there. It's so evil, and it's so insidious, and it's so dangerous. And it can happen to us. It can happen to us not fully examining our beliefs. I don't believe everything that I believed when I was 11. But interestingly, my dad doesn't believe everything he believed when I was 11, and he was the one teaching me. So he was teaching me things that he now thinks aren't true. Well, we need to examine. We need to examine the things we believe. We need to examine the things we come to believe. Paul says it. He says, examine. Test every spirit. And he was even talking about the stuff he was saying. We have to examine. We have to love the truth enough to mine everything to get truth out. But even if the underlying base of our actions are based in truth, there are other truths that we might be avoiding and trying to lie to ourselves about. For instance, we could lie about doing all we can to serve God. We say, I'm doing everything I can. Or I'm giving my best. And you're giving, and your giving is good, but you've lied to yourself and said that you're giving your best and you don't have room for improvement. Because, why? Perhaps because we haven't sought to examine ourselves to find truth about ourselves. Because the pleasure in wickedness may not be pleasure in doing an evil act actively like that, but it could be in being lazy or not being the hard worker that we're called to be. And we see in the parables the condemnation of laziness. And we see the end of the lazy. And even though it clearly condemns it, you can lie to yourself and hide the truth from yourself and believe that it's okay. Dangerous. Insidious. It can happen without you even realizing it. Another evil is that, and this is really basic, lies uphold Satan and they oppose Jesus. We already had the passage back in John 8, verse 44, that talks about Satan as the father of lies. In John 14, 6, it says, Jesus is the truth. I am the way, the truth, and the life. No one comes to the Father but through me. Now, first of all, he's the only path, and that is truth, and we have to guard that truth. But he is the truth. And so, Satan is the father of lies. Jesus is the truth. Lying means that we're siding with Satan. We're siding with the evil one. I always think to myself when I actually use a slide deck, which I really don't like to do, that I normally have one slide in there that it's like, really, that's the entire sermon. And it's right there. That's really the entire sermon. Lying is siding with Satan. Don't side with Satan. That's the whole sermon. That's the whole point. You would think it wouldn't be hard, but it is hard. Even though Satan is the father of lies, even though lies are his tools, he told the first lie, but it's more than that. They're his tools. They're tools for his kingdom. And when you lie, you are a worker in his kingdom. Right here, lies destroy character. Character is a positive word. We sometimes say, oh, that guy, he's a character. But if we talk about somebody and we say, man, she has character, we're using that in a positive sense. We're saying they have good character. They have a good center about them. And the Bible teaches us that we ought to be trying to develop a good name. It tells us that a good name is to be more desired than great wealth, and that favor is better than silver or gold. We should be seeking to have a good name. You even look at Lot, at Sodom and Gomorrah. He was at the gates judging there. He had a good name in the community, even in that corrupt and evil place. But when we lie, it sullies our good name. It affects how people see us. It affects how people see what we say. It's hard to approach someone with the truth of the gospel if they're saying in the back of their mind, she's a liar. It's hard to approach someone with the truth of the gospel when they're saying in the back of their mind, he can't be trusted. That is the salt that has lost its flavor. It's an example of it. That's where you have damaged your influence and you cannot be as effective as you were before. Lies are evil. Lies lead in the wrong direction. All lies lead in the wrong direction. Spiritually, there are only two directions. There's heaven, and there's hell. That's it. Lies lead in the wrong direction. All lies lead in the wrong direction. And sometimes we humans try to convince ourselves that maybe there's an okay lie. That's why we have verses like Proverbs 14:12, that there's a way that seems right unto a man, but the end of it's death. That's why we have passages like that. And I've got a pretty tough example here of a fellow in a chimney. But for now, keep in your mind that all lies point the wrong way, and we try to talk ourselves into exceptions, and we try to lie to ourselves to tell ourselves that other lies are okay. But lies are evil. Lies cause people to lose their souls. All lies oppose truth. Jesus is truth. All lies oppose Jesus. In Revelation 21, verse 8, but for the cowardly and unbelieving and abominable and murderers and immoral persons and sorcerers and idolaters and all liars, their part will be in the lake that burns with fire and brimstone, which is the second death. We quoted a second ago, Revelation 20, it says that the dragon's going to be thrown into that fire, into that lake, forever and ever. And here's where the liars go along with them, along with the murderers and the immoral. And so an example that we see a lot of times brought up with Revelation 21:8 is someone will then bring back up the little lies, the white lies, right? How does my new haircut look? Does this dress make me look fat? How are you going to answer these questions, right? But lies for the greater good are the other side of that equation. They're the heavy stuff. The lies where people will tell you, you're a bad person if you don't lie in that circumstance. But the passage says all liars. And so they've convinced themselves that they're allowed to lie in that circumstance, and that way seems right to them, and that way leads to death. It's dangerous. It's a question of focusing on heavenly versus earthly. Most of the time, when those questions come up, someone is thinking about an earthly consequence, and they've weighed the effect that lying has on your eternal salvation against this earthly consequence, and they've said, I'm going to pick the earthly one. So when I was in junior high school, I was interviewing somebody for some assignment. And it turned out that this person had been in a situation not unlike Rahab, where there was somebody, and they had hid that somebody in their house, and soldiers came into the house and searched the house for that somebody. That's what happened to Rahab. And Rahab is held up in Hebrews 11 for accepting the spies. And I've heard it debated, you know, did she lie? Was the lie a sin? Was that okay? Is she held up for hiding them, but the lying was a sin? And the questions like that. But what struck me about this was that I was here, and I was 14 years old, and I had gone into a Christian's home, the grandmother of one of my friends, and she was openly talking about having lied to people and had no qualms about it at all. She spoke of it as though it were the right thing to do. To have done otherwise would have been wrong. And it stuck in me like a dagger. It stuck in me. And I've thought about it. I thought, well, would I have lied in that circumstance? And what would have happened if Rahab had been like, yep, they're on the roof, they would have died. Right? So is that an acceptable reason to lie? If someone's going to die if you don't lie?
Yeah.
I come back to this verse. It says all liars. It says all liars. But part of the problem there is that we have a false dichotomy. We sit there and we say we only have two options. There are other options. You don't have to say, they're on the roof. You can say nothing. That might get you killed. Justin, I had to lie. They were going to die if I didn't lie. That's the same idea that was in Uzzah's mind. I have to catch the ark. The ark's going to fall. I have to catch it. And God killed him. Yeah, something bad was about to happen. But that didn't mean you got to be bad. Fact of the matter is, lying should not be part of a Christian's behavior. In Colossians, Paul, talking to that church, said, "Do not lie to one another, since you have laid aside the old self with its evil practices." Lying is an evil practice. It's that simple. You've put on a new self who is being renewed to a true knowledge according to the image of the one who created him. You've put on a new self. You've put on Christ to be Christ-like. Now, maybe I will get talked to after this sermon. But I can't imagine Christ lying. I can't imagine him lying because he is the truth. I can't think of a scenario that ends with him lying. Now, as people of truth, we're going to stand in opposition to a large part of society. There certainly are people that think there's nothing wrong with lies, especially white lies. There certainly people think, through situational ethics, that there are circumstances in which you absolutely should lie. But there's one place you can always find truth, and that's in the Word. His Word is truth. And His Word is truth because it originates from Him, and God is truth. We're studying Titus right now, Sunday mornings. Titus 1, verse 2, God can't lie. He can't. We already talked about the verse that said Jesus is the truth. But John writes again over in 1 John 5, and verse 6, that the Spirit is the truth. God in three persons, all of God, the truth. That's what He is. God is love. God is justice. God is righteousness. God is truth. That's what He is. Christ is truth. And we are to be Christ-like. There's one place that we can always find truth. Psalm 119, verse 160. The sum of your word, the totality of your word, is truth. And every one of your righteous ordinances is everlasting. So, the question is, do you love truth? The question is, despite any other influence or effect in your life, will you let go of that which is not true and hold on to that which is true? Will you love His Word because His Word is truth? We've come to the end of our lesson. It's not been a first principles lesson. But the question is, are you separated from God? Lies are sin. Lies separate us from God. Sin separates us from God. Are you separated from God? If you're a Christian and you have separated yourself from God through lies of action, lies of inaction, I can't even. Let me try that again. if you have separated yourself from God with any kind of sin, sins of action or sins of inaction, maybe the sin of lying, maybe the sin of laziness, any sin at all, then we have an opportunity now that you can come forward and ask for the prayers of the congregation. You may need to just go and pray to God yourself, by yourself, about a private thing. But I would encourage anyone that is having struggles to come forward and ask for prayers. Why not? That's what we're here for. We're a family here. Not only ask for prayers, but ask for support. I talked about how insidious lying is. People can get where they love lying. They can tell lies just to tell lies, just to get away with it. If you're trapped in lying, come to people for support. If you've never joined yourself to God through the watery grave of baptism and you know the steps to get there, then there is water available and we are ready. If you don't know the steps, then please go to someone here and ask to study. Any one of the Christians here will study with you or will bring you to somebody and study with you because we care about you and we care about your souls. It all comes down to love. Everything comes down to love. Love God. Love your neighbor. Love everyone. If you have any need of an invitation, come forward while we stand and sing.